So what do you want to do for the drinking game for this episode?
Well, as you know, last week we couldn't have one because it just was out of control. Yeah, and you had to be a little inebriated to get through that episode. So I'm excited to have a drinking game this week. Yeah. And I think it should be whenever you could take audio of Gollum from Lord of the Rings and just stick it over the Ferengis.
Okay.
All right? Because they're straight up golems.
Yeah.
Like it's a pack of golems.
That might be quite a bit. That sounds game to me.
All right, well, we'll try it.
Yeah. Or you could do like if there's ever 30 seconds of continuous capering from the Ferengi.
Oh, dear God. We don't want our listeners to die from alcohol poisoning. Guys, don't do that one. Yeah. We care about you.
Hello, and welcome to Start Trek, the Next Generation Rewatch Podcast, where one longtime fan, myself, Dave, and one Star Trek newcomer, my wife, Amara, watch episodes of TNG, and then we compare notes.
Notes we compare?
Why did you have to do the Yoda?
Because I feel like they did a cheaper pop of Yoda in this episode. I'll get to it.
Okay.
I have notes.
So today we are rewatching episode 5 from TNG, The Last Outpost. This episode originally aired October 19th, 1987. Directed by Richard Kola, written by Herbert Wright. We just finished watching it. I think Amara watched it 3 or 4 times almost.
Some parts I had to watch 7 times.
You just couldn't get enough, eh?
I just got really hung up on the Ferengis jumping around and just got way too distracted from the main plot.
I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on the Ferengi. The other thing I just want to go over real quick, and this came up last time, is stardates. Mm-hmm. So you had asked something about the star dates.
Oh, yeah.
And like this episode opens with Picard telling us, you know, it is star date. I think it was 41398.6 or something like mm-hmm. that. So it turns out the 4 is for the 24th century.
Oh, okay.
The 1 indicates season 1. So season 2 will be 4-2, then 4-3, 4-4, mm-hmm. like that. The other three numbers are just kind of like whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the decimal place tends to indicate days, but not always.
Oh.
So there's no rigorous, like, accepted system.
Okay.
And it's a little weird because, you know, they do Next Generation, mm-hmm. Deep Space Nine, Voyager. Mm-hmm. That goes more than 10 seasons of show.
Oh, yeah.
So they have to go over to, like, instead of 4-1, they have to do 5-1 for some cases. So it's not a perfect system. But anyways.
That's still pretty cool, though.
Yeah. So that's Thank the star you. Dates. So today, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking about The Last Outpost. Amara, before we get into it, did you have any general thoughts about this episode?
Oh, I had so many thoughts, Dave.
Yeah.
First off, so the Ferengis are basically a flock of golems. I don't know what you would call that in the plural.
Yeah. Gullami?
No,
I guess it's golems.
A murder of golems?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, I don't know what the collective noun for golems would be.
Okay.
I guess anyway. A murder.
So I was like, all right, I'm here for this.
We could call it a covet or a precious of golems.
The precious of golems. Oh, I love that. Yeah. Definitely not a tater of golems, though. They really hate those. anyway.
Yeah, so the Ferengi are kind of golem-esque, definitely, in this.
Well, they're like hobbit-sized, yeah. And they do all the Smeagol golem movements. I guess more golem movements, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. And so my first thoughts were like when it started up and, you know, Picard's like started blah, 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 to his space diary, he says like, oh, we're tracking a Ferengi vessel. And I was like, finally, we get some Ferengi action because they were referenced in the first episode, I think, or the first and second, you know?
Yeah.
And they said in that episode they were cannibals, like they're rumored to be cannibals
and
all this other stuff. And I was like, also, you know, I went through this whole like crisis of, wait, was I being insulted in the past when I went through a couple different nations?
They called
me Ferengi or Frenji, depending upon where I was.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty interesting. So I'm glad they're going into it today so I can see what I am depicted as in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to come into it. It's just excited to see your depiction in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, as you mentioned, as we get into it, that we kick off the story with the Enterprise in pursuit of a Ferengi ship to take back this T9 energy converter the Ferengi have stolen. And I personally was also kind of excited, I guess, because the Ferengi at this point hadn't been contacted by a Starfleet or whatever. And like the crew is kind of excited about this too, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I want to just clarify, they have never met the Ferengi, but they're just mad prejudiced against them.
I guess as we hear in the episode that they've only got little stories and stuff like that about what they're like, but like scattered and to some extent inconsistent reports.
Right. Okay. And then also, is it stealing if the thing is unattended and they're not like really communicating with each other's civilizations?
That's a good question.
Like yeah. How do they know it's not abandoned?
Yeah. I mean, like salvage rights or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Rights. Absolutely.
And then I think it's like Data or LeVar says something about like they steal stuff from other cultures.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? As a Ferengi that was going through parts of Northern Africa that were like, hey, we used to have this, but then the British Museum stole it.
Yeah.
I did feel like that was on par for Ferengi's reputation. I was like, oh, yeah, we are kind of the worst sometimes.
It adds up. Yeah.
It does.
So as we start out this episode, we've got Picard, Riker, Data, Geordi, Tasha, Worf, the whole crew kind of out on the bridge, just chasing down this Ferengi ship. And as we open up the episode, we get the little stardate thing that we talked about. And then they finally get close enough to actually see the Ferengi ship, right? And Picard orders like, okay, zoom in on the ship. And we get to see the kind of back of it, right?
Which,
yeah. I don't know.
Looks pretty cool.
It does. It's kind of
lots
like
lots of windows.
Little croissant, like floating in space, a space croissant with lights and stuff.
You know, I actually was seeing a bit of a like Rebel Alliance and like the insignia kind of.
I could kind of see that.
Yeah.
With the kind of sloping
like a croissant.
Top. Yeah.
And like a pointy bit.
So when the Enterprise gets real close, the Ferengi ship drops out of warp and the Enterprise follows and kind of pulls up alongside of the ship, and they find themselves both kind of orbiting this planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, have this little mini standoff, and then all of a sudden the Ferengi shoot out some kind of energy blast, right? Which seems to hit the Enterprise, bounce off their shields, and then they start to drain the Enterprise's power a little bit.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, Picard, kind of some of them are prompting him to return fire, but he refuses to turn fire. He's like, no, we were chasing them. They fired on us to like get us to back off, so we'll back off a little bit.
Yeah, so at that point I was like, okay, everyone else really sucks on this ship, and Picard sucks a little bit, because if you're tailgating someone,
yeah.
like, you deserve the consequences. Yes. Don't be a dick. Don't tailgate.
Yeah, it is basically the galactic equivalent of a brake check.
Yeah, the Ferengi's a brake check, and I was like, as a former Houston driver, I respect that.
Like, it's kind of funny, yeah.
We were tailing this guy, and he brake checked us. We should shoot him down! I was like, damn, Starfleet, someone else is the underdeveloped society here.
But in their defense, like, they stole something. So, like, they're chasing
for that. According to Starfleet.
Oh, wow, you're coming out Team Ferengi so far.
I'm just saying, like, they just seem mad prejudiced against them, and I'm really worried after the last episode, so... Yeah.
All right. So I thought it was really cool when the Ferengi ship turns around right after they get fired on. Because I really like the design of these vessels. Or mm-hmm. sorry, not fired on, but as the Enterprise backs off. I thought they're super cool. Like, those of you familiar with the show, I'm sure familiar with the Ferengi design. It's kind of swooping, and in the front has like two little prongs.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool. And when I was reading about it a little bit, turns out this design was actually inspired by horseshoe crabs.
I could totally see that, because right? I see that with the Rebel Alliance insignia too, from the original Star Wars.
Oh yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It was really cool. There's not a lot of spaceships designed by like based on horseshoe crabs, right?
Which is just crazy to me, because isn't the price of horseshoe crab blood like the most expensive liquid?
Oh.
Besides maybe printer ink. That was serious. I didn't mean that as a joke. I've been wounded by big printer before.
I think it is. I don't know if it's the most expensive, but it is super expensive because people use it to test like medical supplies
for sure.
Make sure they've not been contaminated. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm like, all right, Ferengis, I see in your horseshoe crab. That's pretty cool. They see the value of horseshoe crab blood. Like, okay. Picard Starfleet chose a different design for the Enterprise, which isn't all that enterprising, but. You know, who am I to judge?
But now that the Enterprise finds itself like kind of head to head with the Ferengi ship, they realize they're starting to lose power, right? Like their power is being drained from their shields and their batteries or whatever. And like, they can't move anymore.
Yeah.
They're like helpless in front of this Ferengi ship after the Ferengi had blasted them. Mm-hmm. And Picard and the rest of the crew are like, uh-oh, we're powerless. We're at their mercy.
To be clear,
bum, bum, bum.
Worf says, immobilized by the damn Ferengi. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, hold your chops there, Space Karen. Like, what is up with everyone on the ship? Like, do we need to have another HR meeting?
It's so crazy that they haven't encountered these people.
Yeah.
And they're all like, Ferengi.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like spacism. Space and racism. It's alive and well, Dave.
I chalk it up to, at this point, still kind of choppy writing. Like, the writers probably still don't know who these characters are and don't have the vibe yet. So the Enterprise is immobilized by the Ferengi laser blast, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have the usual, like, Enterprise opening credits, like...
Yeah.
And when we return, Picard is kind of going around to all his chief of staff and people trying to get updates on the situation. Mm-hmm. So Worf and Tasha are reporting in that, okay, everything's fine, but we're losing some power. They tried to hear from engineering, but no one is responding from the engineering deck.
Okay, I have questions about this.
Yeah.
No one touched their stupid insignia thing. Just supposed to be a communicator. They're just like, oh, comms are down. And it's like, did you guys all conveniently forget that you've got like this communicator thing on your boob? Like,
so I guess that's a good question. So when you're on the bridge, the whole bridge is basically wired like Siri. So if you just say Picard to engineering, the bridge will pick it up and you don't have to do the like, brrr, like touch your comm badge.
Well, couldn't you like step out of the bridge and check your comm badge before going to engineering? I'm presuming there's some distance away.
This is something I've always wondered is like, you know, I don't know. I don't remember actually when they're like away missions and they do the like, brrr, and they want to talk to each other. Does that go to the ship and then back, or does it go like locally?
Why are you asking me?
No, I'm just saying this is the question. Oh, and so if it goes locally, if it's badge to badge communication, you could do like you're saying, just go off the bridge, go on the turbo lift and see if the comm badge will work. Okay.
No, I love you. That was a fantastic tangent. Yes.
Yes, okay.
And TikTok. I see my justification was old people and technology, you can't mix them. So, but yours sounds better and more thought out and less ageist. Okay. So we'll go with yours.
As the Picard is going around getting information from the crew, we hear a little bit from Troy and Riker. Troy mentions that she tried to use her empathic powers and she can't feel anything from the Ferengi over there. Data does mention from what he has gathered in reading about the Ferengi that they're known to be traitors.
Yeah, and that's with the D guys, not
yes, with two traitors. Yes.
Like a bunch of, a race of Han Solos.
And also Data kind of mentions that Ferengi are basically like strong capitalists. And in the course of this, Data discusses the Ferengi or refers to them as being Yankee traitors, kind of much like Riker's forebears in the U.S.
So Data kind of is implying heavily, if not outright saying that they're scammers.
He does. Yeah. Kind of go in that direction. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then he's like, oh, capitalism, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, did Data not study capitalism at all? Because I'm pretty sure a billionaire class currently isn't really concerned about fair trade. It never has been.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would argue that capitalists aren't really concerned with fair trade.
Yeah.
Like, they want to have that system so they can have unfair trades.
Exactly.
Advantage.
So it's like, Data, you, welcome to Europe and the Americas for the last, like, you know, well, I guess for Europe, over 1,000 years in America. 1400s. Damn it. Got it. Nailed it.
Yeah. Okay. Late stage capitalism, not a lot of free trade going on.
Yeah. But okay. As they would say in the South, bless your heart, Data.
Yeah. So this kind of starts a whole other conversation when Data mentions the red, white, and blue flag on the bridge about flag colors.
Mm-hmm.
And we get this really interesting moment where, you know, Picard was saying something about the U.S. was red, white, and blue flag, but French was much more the same colors, but much more properly used as blue, white, and red.
Okay. Minimalist Picard does not actually beat out something that's very jauntily decorated. First off, as an American, how dare you, sir? Second off, you're speaking with a British accent, brah. You're not going to bring up the British flag, brah.
So it's really funny because I think we talked about this in our first episode, like, Picard was initially intended to be French, right? And in this first season, we get a couple of these moments of like Francophilia, I guess we could call it, like peeking in, which I don't think really happened later on in the series. Like he kind of drops this whole I love France thing. There's the occasional like singing Frère Jacques and stuff, but.
Oh, that I'm really excited to look forward to that. I also wanted to point out that I did a Google search because I was curious and I'm not one of those people who has like an insane memory for flags, you know, to see how many flags use red, white, and blue exclusively. Flags. It's 29 countries. Including, but not limited to, Iceland, the US, New Zealand, Croatia. They also have a bit of yellow, but whatever. Laos, Nepal. And I could go on. The point is there's 29 countries. So like, they're not, you guys did stripes. Little solid stripes. Good for you.
Is it like, it's like 220 countries in the world or something like that?
Oh, 195.
Oh, that was way off.
And 29 of them exclusively use red, white, and blue.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we have this little moment where Picard is more properly listing off blue, white, and red as the French colors, a little French brag. And then Data just starts like reaming off like countries and their flag colors.
Yeah.
Like a show off. And Picard's like, thank you, Data. That's enough.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, so maybe we should all lighten up on Data this episode. Like,
I could kind of see Data being a little annoying, like that know-it-all person that doesn't know when to like shut up because he's still learning how to be human.
I don't know. I just read it a different way. And I was like, take it down a notch, Picard. You got 28 other countries that have the same color scheme. Oh, yeah. You really think you're better than the other 28 countries? And also, stop being a le petit poulet. Because that's right. I learned insults in French.
A little chicken?
A little chicken.
Oh, okay.
I was told that was an insult when I learned French in public school at some point in my life. So, yeah. Suck it, Picard.
So now we find ourselves down in engineering where Riker has gone after Geordi, who's initially gone to sort out like the communication issue with engineering. And they're down there. And like, as Geordi explains, like they're essentially stuck by this energy field, right? So whenever they try to push in one direction, the energy field pushes back on them. And then they go the other way and the energy field pushes back with equal but opposite force.
Yeah, I have a couple questions here.
Yeah.
What are they teaching at Starfleet? Because it just seems like, having Data have to dumb down, or not Data, sorry, LeVar, Geordi, dumb down opposing forces.
Yeah.
Is like, you guys didn't cover that in like piloting 101? Like, where's the stuff where you actually get to physics?
Yeah. So I'm glad you said that. So I think, one, I think that's obviously for the benefit of the audience. But two, as we go further in, the explanations get a little bit more complicated.
Right.
In later seasons. Yeah.
Speaking of complicated explanations, where the hell is everyone in engineering?
Yeah, it's like a ghost.
It is a ghost town. Yeah. And so I put down that HR needs to control when people are having their coffee breaks, because this seems like an emergency and maybe engineering should be on it.
Yeah.
And they're just gone. It's a ghost town.
No, they've got like the red blinking lights for red alert. And it's like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah. And it's like just LeVar and Riker, who doesn't know what opposing forces are, trying to sort things out. And I'm like, oh, they're screwed.
Riker doesn't need to know physics. He just looks good. That's his job.
He does look, he's very handsome.
Being tall, looking good, and having that chest hair poking through his shirt. Like,
oh, he hasn't since like the first episode.
Oh, wow.
I've been checking and I haven't seen it.
Maybe he's shorn like a baby seal.
But he does just seem to be like, I am the handsomest. I shall take the lead. Yeah. It's like, we get it, Riker. You have high self-esteem. Good
Please
for you.
Just follow my chiseled chin.
Basically, yes.
So as Geordi points out, this counterforce has a bit of a delay. I think it was like 300 microseconds or something. And Riker's like, wait a minute, how fast can we move back and forth? Why don't we just try going back one direction and then suddenly lurching forward at high warp and see if that'll shake us loose of the little force fieldy dude thing.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, force field. Interesting.
Yeah.
Totally not ripping off Star Wars. Okay.
Kind of makes sense. So they prepared to do all this.
Yeah. Okay. So all of a sudden, engineering people pop up. They pan the camera and they're all just like over by the engine thing.
Oh, okay.
The warper? I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, the warper. The big warpy thing.
There's a couple people in the background who are just like super chill, like, oh, cool. We're all going to die, but everything's fine. Just another day on Starfleet.
I mean, this has got to happen to them like every couple of days. Yeah, every couple of decimal places in the Stardate.
Everyone's like just on Xanax. They're like, it's cool, man.
So they're all geared up to do their like fast warp plan.
Right. To be clear, it's warp 9. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know if that was comparable to light speed in the Star Wars universe or ludicrous speed in the Spaceballs universe.
That's a good question. I think it's more close to ludicrous speed.
Oh my God, that's crazy fast.
As I remember, it's like 1,000 or 10,000 times the speed of light.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. That could be a little...
That is ludicrous.
It's... I got to look at the warp curve again. If you want, we can go into it further. I can get some charts and drawings. And we
let's do that.
Okay.
That sounds so...
Well, there's many technical things we can discuss, like how the transporters work.
Okay, also, only LeVar could pull out saying woo-wee and make it seem cool.
Oh, yeah.
Because he says woo-wee.
He's like ready to do the warp plane. He's like, woo-wee, we'll shake him loose or something.
Yeah. And I'm like, wow, if Riker had said that, I would be booing him. But since LeVar said it, it's fine.
They're really working hard to get this writing down.
Yeah.
So as they ramp up to do this shake loose plan, they finally decide to hail the Ferengi. And like, personally, I don't know why this took so long, right? Like, that's standard procedure is you try to like hail somebody. Especially when they've stolen your shit, right?
Yeah,
Anyway, so they finally hail, but, like, they don't hear anything, and Picard kind of comes out swinging over the intercom, demanding that the Ferengi return the energy converter thing. They get no response. So then they decide to try their shake-loose plan. So everyone, like, straps in, gets ready, grabs a hold of stuff, and then they hit go, and basically you get, like, this little vibration thing happen, where the ship looks like it's shaky, shaky, shaky.
And the camera looks shaky, shaky, shaky. Let's be honest. The actors are all standing perfectly still.
So this is something they do as the series evolves, is like when they get into space battles and stuff, is like they'll lurch the camera and the actors have to like coordinate their lurching so it seems like they're being knocked around.
Oh, yeah. I think that was normal at this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But like, Hollywood had discovered this.
They get much better at it as the series progresses.
Okay.
Like this time, as you see, they didn't even shake it. They didn't move at all. It was just the camera shaking.
Right. I know this is relatively minor in the grand scheme of things, but where the hell are their seatbelts?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
There's like no seatbelts at any point.
No seatbelts.
So I guess my answer would be like, if you're in space.
Yeah.
And like you suddenly come to a stop.
Which they seem to do a lot.
You're moving so fast that seatbelts would like cut through your body. They'd be like, they would not help.
But by that logic, wouldn't you be like catapulted out the front window there?
I think either way, you're toast, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What they could have is like some really rapidly expanding foam that just like fills the room and just like catches you.
I feel like you're messing with me now, but I totally believe it. Is that a thing in the Star Trek universe?
I don't want to do any spoilers.
Okay. All right.
Keep an eye out for the foam.
I will keep my eyes out for this foam.
So when they try to shake free, it doesn't work. As I mentioned, you just get these vibration. And then Picard swears in French. He says, like, merde. Which, again.
Which means poo, you guys. Yeah. For all those who did not take public school French. Just translating. I'm so good at French, you guys.
Thanks, babes. And as soon as they like they kind of stop their aborted like shaky shaky thing, it looks like someone is starting to download all the Enterprise data banks and read all of their data.
Oh, we missed something important though.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, okay. So Picard and Riker get all smug because they're like, ooh, we know of Sun Tzu. Oh, and they're like swapping quotes.
Yeah.
I guess it's more just like Riker citing a quote. And Picard says, I'm glad the Academy is still teaching the strategies of Sun Tzu. And I was just like, but not physics again. And also, I would counter with a different Sun Tzu quote because guess what? I did freaking debate in high school and I memorized like 10 of these because you can whip them off at like any time and you sound smart as hell. So one that I used a lot was, if ignorant of both your enemy and yourself, you are certain to be in peril.
Isn't that kind of exactly what he's saying? Like, know your enemy and know yourself and you'll always have victory?
No, because if ignorant of both yourself and your enemy, which they're ignorant of the Ferengi, so why are they attacking something that they're ignorant about?
What was the quote that he said? Was it, know yourself and know your enemy and you always have victory?
Yeah, which is the opposite of...
I would argue that's a translation issue.
Possibly. It could be a translation issue, but... The point is, the quote they used is completely undermined by my Sun Tzu quote, so suck it. And also, I have another one that's unrelated entirely to this scenario, but I just wanted to share with you.
Yeah.
It was my favorite Sun Tzu quote.
Yeah.
If your enemy is of choleric temper,
yes,
irritate him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I always thought that was like cholera, like Oregon Trail, blah, blah, blah. Again, Idaho public school education. And it turns out it had nothing to do with cholera because Sun Tzu probably had never encountered cholera.
That would make sense. Yeah.
And a choleric temper just means like quick to temper, quick to agitation. It has nothing to do with drinking bad water. dying on the Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone else knew that, but I was surprised when I looked it up because I was like, yeah, if someone's feeling sick from the cholera, damn, yeah, pipe them up.
They're
really angry and irritated.
I would say
their bowels be mad irritated.
If your opponent is caloric, just wait and the cholera will
Wait. And they're already making bad decisions about their imbibement.
Or they'll just die of cholera.
Or they'll die of cholera. Yeah. So don't drink the same water, I guess.
So while they're recovering from the shakiness, someone is trying to download all their databases and read all their information.
Hold on a second. Our station manager's barking at us. Okay, she just gave us a look that said merit, so I think we should continue.
And around the same time, suddenly Troy has a feeling like maybe we should be looking at the planet, not so much just at the Ferengi. But then nothing kind of really comes of that. Anyway, so Picard calls everyone into their conference room to have a conversation about what their options are, right?
By everyone, you mean men. No, Yar.
I think
no.
Yar's in this one, isn't she?
What?
I think Yar's in this one.
She's not in the conference room meeting.
I think there's a later meeting she's not in.
Oh, no, this one right now. I'm telling you, I watched it several times because I was like, please, there should be a lady in this meeting.
Would you like to place a bet to watch
the second Star
Empire
Wars?
Strikes Back?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Which I, yes, okay. Empire Strikes Back, and then I have to make you margaritas for a week.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
We'll go.
So I think Yar will be in this next meeting.
She's not in the next meeting. This is like the whole Billiam thing.
Yeah, possibly.
Which he was called Will this episode.
Oh, where's Lieutenant Yar going? Might she be
off
going
screen.
Into... Hmm.
Who's oh,
that?
No.
Who's that
I got
speaking
my
in the meeting?
Wrong.
Oh, no. Yeah, they have a couple of conference room meetings.
Dang it.
And I actually have a note in the next line that like both Tasha and Worf say, hit them hard and hit them fast.
Yeah.
That was more of a Worf impression than a Tasha. But Troy instead counsels having more conversation. Like, we tried to talk to the Ferengi, but did you really tell them anything they really wanted to hear? Or you just kind of barked at them for taking your T9 energy converter?
Yeah.
So everyone's like, okay, that's whatever. We'll decide what to do. Everyone leaves, but then Riker sticks around for a little bit. And then this was kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Picard alludes to Riker about maybe some other option they could pursue. Some option
yeah,
that leads
really
to total
confused.
Annihilation.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd clarify that for me. Because I was like, okay, first off, Troy is reasonable. Because she's basically saying, you know, maybe shower them with compliments, something they want to hear. And
absolutely.
I'm like, that's how you human, like, if you want to make friends,
but
don't tailgate the hell out of a stranger.
This is why you have a counselor. She can give you that, or I guess you could just be a normal human being. But
yeah. It's just, like, basic etiquette. Anyway, and then, like, yeah. And so, yes, they, like, there's this weird meetup between Picard and Riker. And
Billiam,
he's just like, I hope we don't have to have this conversation about total annihilation. And I'm like, no, yeah, you do need to have that conversation because that was very unclear. And that sounds really like total annihilation, like humanity or like just the ship. I mean, I know that would also be terrible, but.
So I could see two options. I guess one option would be Picard doesn't want to give up the ship to the Ferengi and so decides to self-destruct it, right? To scuttle the ship. Mm-hmm. That would be one interpretation. And the other is like, whatever we're about to do is going to lead to war between us and the Ferengi.
Okay.
But I have no idea which one he's talking about. It's very unclear from this.
All right. Well, I know how much you love Picard. So I love you for loving Picard.
Yeah.
But I think he's being like a really shitty captain right now.
Yeah.
Like,
I agree.
Just communicate with the Ferengi, guys.
Yeah.
Oh,
this goes back to what I said before. Why not just hail them in the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I chalk a lot of this up to it's almost like this first season.
Mm-hmm.
I almost don't count as like real Star Trek.
That's totally fair because I feel like people have different attitudes and stuff too. Like this episode, LeVar does not really seem to have that much of a sense of humor. Whereas before, I think he was like high-fiving with Data and they were like swapping jokes.
Yeah.
And this time, every time Data makes a joke, LeVar is just like, nah.
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys, why are you not bros?
Yeah. So we have this little conference and Picard has this weird conversation with Riker. And then he goes out onto the bridge and hails the Ferengi. And this time, instead of saying, get us back the energy converter, he says he offers to do whatever is necessary or required to talk. And he asks for terms, right, presumably terms of surrender. Mm-hmm. And then we go to commercial break. And when we come back, we've got the Ferengi on the comms, right?
Or what I like to call a sexy Yoda impression with proper sentence structure for the most part.
And we hear back from Daemon Tar. So Daemon is like a captain in Ferengi language.
Okay, so he identifies himself as Daemon Tar.
Daemon.
But it sounds like it's a, when he says it all together, it sounds like Diamond Tar.
Oh.
So I was like, good for you. Like everyone is rating, like just being so mean about y'all and your race and stuff. And you're referencing yourself as a diamond. And I was like, good for you, Tar.
He's like
good
launching his music career.
He's just listening to some Rihanna.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to shine bright like a diamond. Yeah. And I was like, good for you. Nice. And then I rewound it and watched it with the subtitles. And I was like, oh, it's not bad. Okay.
Well, that's a missed opportunity.
It was. Because I was like, oh, good for you. Build yourself up, Buttercup.
But so we learned in this conversation, Diamond Tar is refusing unconditional surrender. Right. And so there's a little bit of confusion here. But Picard realizes very quickly that actually the Ferengi seem to be offering to surrender to them, not the Enterprise. And he realizes actually both ships are stranded. It's not that the Ferengi have paralyzed them, it's that they're both like stuck in this spot, having their battery and energies drained. And so Picard requests visual communication with, basically he asks to zoom the Ferengi. Right.
Yeah, and why is everyone on the ship being so freaking judgmental of this entire other group of space people?
Yeah.
Like it totally gives off Team America vibes.
Yeah.
Just like, who are you guys? The space police? Yeah. Like, don't the Ferengi have diplomatic immunity since they're not part of your whatever it is, Federation of Planets, you think?
Yeah, Federation of Planets.
Yeah. Like, what the hell?
I mean, this is something, again, like, this first season is crazy.
Doesn't make sense.
In later seasons, a lot of the Enterprise crew, they're all about contacting new life, about meeting new people, being respectful of their, like, beliefs or whatever and their way of doing things and understanding differences. In this first one, it's like, fuck
these
guys.
They're the real Ferengi.
Yeah.
In the mean way.
But so ultimately, the Ferengi agree to Zoom, and we get our first glance of the Ferengi face.
Yeah, and I love that this guy just starts out blasting with the insults. He's just like, ah, humans are so ugly. And
yes.
I was like, you know what? Who am I to judge? Because I have been tailgated in Houston, and I have said much worse things to people when they pulled up next to me.
Yeah.
Like, much meaner gestures and words have come out of my mouth. So, you know, who am I to judge someone who's a bit hurt, who feels like they've been, like, attacked?
Yeah.
Then to, like, stoop to insult someone's appearance. You know, I get it. I'm still Team Ferengi right now. I'm like, all right, who am I to judge?
I also like how the Daemon Tar, in this case, when he does his zoom, he's got like a white blurred background. Like we can't see anything about his ship, I guess.
Presumably. Oh, I didn't notice that. I thought he was just doing the sharp business background. That's how COVID brain my mind is.
Yeah. He's got like a beach behind him or something.
Or just like a ton of ponchos.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I can't let them see my poncho pile.
So in the course of their Zoom, Tar offers to return the T9 energy device, and he also offers up the lives of his second officers in recompense.
Which Data makes a hilarious joke about.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, lucky Starfleet doesn't require that. And he says it to LeVar, who's just like, straight face.
Yeah.
Like, no laughs for you this episode, Data.
Like, Data's just like passing notes in class, basically. Like, yeah.
And LeVar's suddenly like kind of a jerk. And I'm like, I don't like you, LeVar. Really? So suddenly LeVar is like, he's the one who's saying, woo wee!
Yeah.
And then he goes to being like too cool for school. Like, hey, we're on duty.
Yeah.
You were on duty with Riker and you said, woo wee!
Maybe he's disappointed because his little shaky plan didn't work.
Yeah,
he's just down in the dumps.
Oh, yeah.
And Data tried to cheer him up. So after this, they decide to go into the conference room again. And this
is the
all-male
meeting. Yes,
this is the meeting. So when they go into this meeting, like Riker, Geordi, Data, and Picard, first of all, there's a couple of kids in the conference room, which Riker like chases out.
I was like, great, other kids that aren't Wesley.
We need to hear more from these kids.
I was like, yeah.
So Data sits down and he's going to present some information about the planet they're around. But on the table, on the desk, is like a pair of Chinese finger cuffs.
Mm-hmm.
And so Data just kind of absentmindedly starts playing with it and like just sticks his finger in the hole and gets one finger stuck and continues on with the briefing, puts his other finger in there. And then he's like stuck in the finger cuffs.
Yeah.
And he's trying to manipulate the controls or whatever on the display, and he can't.
Mm-hmm.
He found himself stuck, or as he describes it, an odd functional impasse.
Yeah. And LeVar laughs at Data.
I love this scene.
And I'm like, LeVar, you are being such a jerk. And also, don't pretend you weren't puzzled by a Chinese finger trap the first time you used it. Like, we all were. All right? This just happens to be Data's first day.
Yeah. Like, I really enjoyed this scene. Like, it made me laugh kind of hard. Well, out loud, at least. And the way, like, Riker and Geordi are kind of, like, laughing at him, too, but Picard's, like, not in for a shit.
He's like, total annihilation, yeah. Guys.
Total annihilation. Remember the stakes, guys. Yeah. But yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
I also wanted to point out that has been said multiple times, and it was reiterated in this meeting, that the Ferengis are the inferior race. And I wanted to say, hold up a second. Which race was it, or species, that learned the other species' native language?
Oh.
And just immediately put it together and stuff.
Oh, so yeah, that's a good point.
Because I was like, I'm pretty sure Picard didn't learn, like, Ferengi speech.
Yeah, that's a really good point. But it turns out that there are these things called, like, universal basic translators.
Damn it, okay.
That, like, I think are built into the ship that'll basically, convert the language into English and back.
All right, I have to step off my soapbox, because I was like, how dare they?
No.
They mastered the intricacies of English in seconds, and they're inferior?
It's a good point. It's a good, but yeah, there
okay,
is this
yeah,
other
putting away the soapbox. Okay.
Yeah. So in the course of this conversation in the conference room where Data gets his fingers trapped, basically what he tries to relay is that they're around this planet, which used to be part of this highly advanced empire from the past, like 500,000 years ago, the T'Kan Empire. And that the surface of this planet, or this planet, may be one outpost from this empire, right? And so around this time, as Data's delivering this information, they had sent a probe out earlier, and the probe finally returns with some information, and the probe reveals these two, like, spiky lightning bolts coming from the planet surrounding either ship, holding the Enterprise and the Ferengi vessel in place. And so Picard's like, oh, yeah, it's the planet. The planet's holding us here. It's not the Ferengi. Let's send an away team down to investigate.
No apologies or anything. No one's like, oh man, our bad. We're just like, oh.
So Picard decides to send Riker, but he also thinks this might be a good opportunity to team up with the Ferengi. And so when we return to the bridge after the conference room, Picard zooms up with the Ferengi. They've also in the meantime learned that it's the planet, not the Enterprise, that are holding them there. Picard invites them to beam down to the surface together, and he does this in a kind of a way to promote diplomacy, diplomatic relations between the two people, hoping for some treaty in the future. And the Ferengi go along, they join together, and they investigate the surface, right? So the Ferengi send a team of three scientists.
For some reason, Picard thinks it's a great idea to send in Worf and, like, Gunzaho Yar. And I'm like, wasn't Worf just, like, sharpening his knives? Like, we should go and annihilate them.
So I think it was actually Riker that requests Worf specifically. He's like, I might need a little bit more help. Can I use spare Worf? And it's like, yeah.
Yeah, and Worf in the meantime is just like, I really should have tried out for aliens. Like, I just feel like I'd be better as a Marine.
Yes.
Just shoot first, ask later.
Worf would have been an amazing Marine.
He would have been so amazing as a Marine.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wouldn't have freaked out like Bill Paxton. Yeah, anyway. But yeah, so I was just like, Worf, you're in the wrong universe, bro. Yeah.
Well, so Tasha, Data, Geordi, Riker all go down along with Worf, and they beam down onto the surface of this planet. And so we follow the story of Riker as he goes down, and when he beams onto the surface, the planet they wind up on is very obviously a soundstage, right? Like, I know that they have minimal money at this point, but it's like, it's pretty clear. It looks honestly like a set from the first Star Trek.
You say possible set from the first Star Trek. I say screensaver for Windows in the 90s. Like the swirling mist.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like kind of barren with a couple little like styrofoam rocks sticking out of the ground and dry ice just all over the place. And these giant illuminated like crystally things.
I for a second thought they were French fries. And I was so psyched.
Oh, do you remember that movie, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was like a play park you could go, I think, in Disney or Universal.
Yeah, I went there.
Yeah, and they had like giant French fries and stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, they had a giant Oreo. And I remember being really disappointed as a kid because I thought it was a real like giant Oreo.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is amazing. Oh. And I was like 7. Anyway,
well, maybe these
it wasn't real.
French fries from that.
Yeah, well, it wasn't French fries. They weren't French fries, I should say, Dave. I was once again disappointed.
No, sorry, babes. So anyways, but when Riker beams down, you know, on this kind of ridiculous soundstage, it turns out he's separated. Riker is separated from the rest of his team, right? So he's like wandering around trying to find his people and kind of walks on this precipice and yells out, hello, is there anybody out there?
And yeah, and also, lightning. I think you've mentioned this before, but the whole like transport devices are crazy terrifying. And the fact that they're this spread out and there's a bunch of crystal French fries.
Yeah.
Like, they could, how is no one skewered on a French fry?
Yeah.
This is very impressive and lucky for them.
Oh, no, those transporters are
scary.
I mean, I don't want to go into another, like, tech diatribe on this episode, but I've got a lot to say about those in the future. Anyways, so the first person Riker encounters is Data, right? So he finds Data, and now he and Data are walking around, and they come across Geordi, who's actually upside down. He, like, materialized upside down, stuck by his foot. So Data tries to help Geordi down from his, like, crystal prison, and Geordi sees the Ferengi approach, kind of over the rise of this, like, styrofoam hill.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ferengi, when he sees them, have these energy whips.
Laser snakes! Yeah.
Laser snakes?
Laser snakes.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I remember seeing these when I was a kid. I remember, like, I knew that they had them. But when you see them again, they're just so ridiculous.
They're basically pool noodles.
Yes. they're like pool noodles with, like, a lightsaber handle painted on.
Once again, the conclusion I drew was, the Ferengi of laser snakes. Starfleet has phasers. The Ferengi are the superior race.
I strongly disagree. I think
laser snakes, Dave.
A laser snake is a hugely impractical weapon.
I love it. And I feel like that's the only thing that would have a chance at killing Samuel L. Jackson. Okay. That's not my first snakes on a plane joke.
Nice. I wasn't sure if that was like a... I forget his character in Star Wars. Like,
Mace Windu?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was a Mace Windu reference, but no. It's a snakes on the plane reference.
Oh my God, Dave, his lightsaber was purple, okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which he specially had made for his character.
Yeah.
Like, no other Jedi had purple until he came along. So Samuel Jackson's like, hey, can I have a purple lightsaber? And George looks like, all right.
Yeah.
So don't you dare compare laser snakes to Mace Windu's lightsaber.
Well, I thought you meant it was the only way that he could be defeated, but you're right. Clearly the purple lightsaber is going to win against a laser snake.
Yeah. Cut those snakes in half, man. If only he had that on the plane, the movie would have been like 20 minutes.
But yeah, I don't know whose idea these energy whips or laser snakes were. It's hugely impractical. I know they wanted to do something different or whatever, but it's like incredibly impractical. Like,
well, I happen to love them, so okay. Whoever's idea it was, I applaud you for your creativity.
Nice. All right.
Although when they are like broken,
yeah,
they look like a five-year-old tried to make a lightsaber.
Yeah.
They're just like straight.
Yeah, like a limp lightsaber. Anyway, so they all get laser snaked, right? So like Geordi and Riker Geordi and Data get like zapped by the laser. Riker
and
goes down to
the stun setting on the laser snake.
Yes, not the venom setting.
Yeah.
So they get rendered unconscious. And then we go to commercial. And when we return, we find ourselves on board the Enterprise, which is basically slowly losing power and everyone's getting super cold.
I just wanted to point out that it seems like a massive design flaw that life support would go completely off. Do they not have a gas generator anywhere? Or they're just like, fossil fuels? Yeah.
No, so that's a good question. They do
it
have,
seems
like,
very, like, there's just no fail safes, and that I'm very concerned by that.
They do have, we find out in later episodes, right? They've got, like, backup life support and other stuff, but it's all coupled to their main, like, power system to the ship. They don't have a fossil fuel generator or some completely other system.
Yeah. Maybe those like fancy glove warmers you shake and put in your
glove. Oh yeah,
the
chemical glove. That's a great point. We've got that stuff here.
We have that stuff. I just was really concerned by the lack of consideration for life support. And I'm like, you know, Apollo like 12 or 11. Oh, 12 astronauts had more consideration. So
yeah.
What the hell?
Like what? They barely even have blankets.
Oh, yeah. So that's something else. Not only do they barely have blankets, they don't know how to use them. Because when it switches back to the ship, we see Troy and Picard talking.
Yeah.
And Troy has a folded up blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of her conversation with Picard, she puts the folded up blanket on another crew member. She's just like, plop.
She doesn't
unfold it. She just plops it on one side of this gal's shoulder.
Yeah.
And it's that's not how you blanket, Troy.
Maybe Troy felt emotionally, this is the coldest part of this person. You just warm it up with double blanket.
Then also, why is she not breaking out her poncho collection? We already saw it's extensive. No one goes to their cabin to grab blankets. They're all just like, ooh, I'm going to just shudder in my spandex uniform.
Yeah, they don't have like any gloves or like a coat. Yeah.
I'm just talking super basic, Dave. Just like maybe layer your spandex.
Yeah.
Maybe
wear
get
your
the blanket
uniform
off your bed.
Yeah.
You know, put your pillowcase on your head to retain that heat coming out of your head.
Yeah.
Smart.
No, I think we should see more of their crew with pillowcases on their head. I agree. It would just make sense.
I mean, they're there's different things you can make as a hat, yeah. Dave.
There are options. There are options.
This is just like, wow, yeah. You guys really would not make it far.
I do love the idea of Troy just like doling out
her various ponchos
and other like pieces of clothing from her room.
I mean, it's better than her just being like, oh, I'm so cold in my spandex. Oh, if only we had more layers. Yeah. It's like, oh no, layers are for your off days.
And when they wake up, well, I guess we have this scene where the Ferengi are kind of raiding the bodies, the unconscious bodies of Riker, Worf, Geordi, and Data, and just kind of picking up their comm badges and be like, oh, it's gold. Yeah,
okay, so I just wanted to say, no, everyone, that's not gold. And if you believe that's gold, Ferengis, Riker, everyone else at Starfleet, I have like 40 pounds of that crap from our wedding to sell them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it just gold, like, plated, or just...
I mean, some of it's cardboard that I spray-painted rose gold.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so like... Yeah, I have gold.
So if anyone wants some post-wedding gold.
Oh. But I just thought it was funny because I'm like, that doesn't even look like imitation gold. Oh, it straight up looks like bronze.
You should start a company called Age, Amara's Gold Exchange.
No. Try to take my giant cardboard D and A into a thrift store and be like, what can I get for this, good sir? It's solid gold.
Oh my god. But one thing I do want to point out, so we're watching this alongside as we talk about it. There's one scene where you've got the three Ferengi talking about these gold communicators and talking about the crew. This is about 30-35 in the episode. The middle Ferengi is an actor named Armin Shimerman. He goes on to play a Ferengi in Deep Space Nine as like a full-time cast member. And he does so many cameos in other Star Trek. Like, I think he does some Voyager stuff as well. He's a phenomenal actor in the series. Like, he does so many different roles. He's a really awesome character actor. And he played one of the original Ferengis in this.
Oh, cool.
It is very cool. Yeah.
That's really neat.
So as the Ferengi starts scheming, Riker wakes up and starts talking to them. And in the middle of their conversation, you get this thunder going off. And the Ferengi are just like... Their ears are just blasted.
Scheming, Dave? That's the word choice you go with?
What would you say?
Wow.
What would you
prejudiced.
Say?
Talking amongst themselves about these people who followed them and have scared them.
You're really
and just
team
like
Ferengi.
Freaked them out. Yeah. You know? And they're smaller, Dave. They're hobbit size.
They stole this energy converter.
It was abandoned as far as they know.
Oh my god.
And also, they are very chic. One of the Ferengi.
With their fur?
What?
With their, like, fur.
No, Dave. Okay, obviously fur. Don't wear fur, you guys.
Well, it could
like,
be faux fur.
There's faux fur that's freaking awesome. But yeah, don't wear fur. And also, if it was real fur, I'm pretty sure PETA would have a spaceship and throw paint at them.
Why are they chic?
Because they paired faux fur with sequins and headpieces. And I was like, I love that. You guys are really doing your style. Shine bright like a diamond.
Oh, my God.
And also,
no wonder they're called diamond.
Yeah, and also
it's a whole vibe they've got.
It is a whole vibe. They've got like fantastic nail polish. Like I have the exact same shade of like periwinkle in my nail collection. I was just like,
So what did you think about their teeth?
Okay, so that confused me as a former veterinary student because those are carnivore teeth. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, maybe they are cannibals. But I was like, hey, but I don't want to judge. I don't want to be like Starfleet, so I'm not going to jump to conclusions.
Okay. I really did enjoy how, like, the thunder just, like, sent them over the edge and they're, like, grabbing their ears, like, howling in pain just because of some
like, probably sensitive ears.
They do have very sensitive ears, right? Their ears are enormous, and they do have famously excellent hearing. So while Riker is distracting them and talking to them, we see Worf in the background kind of gets up, gets ready.
To which I said, Worf, no!
And then just, like, charges and, like, lifts two of them up, like, grabs their legs and, like, tosses them upside down.
Yes.
And then, like, Data charges over and he wakes up too and grabs one of them, kind of like he did Wes in the very first episode and lifts him up with one hand.
Yeah.
And they start fighting and then Worf calls them pygmy cretins, which I thought was really awesome.
Like pulling out your SAT words. All right.
And just then, as the Ferengi are kind of winning the fight and they're about to like kill the crew, Tasha arrives, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, I actually have. I saw this fight scene and I rewound it several times.
I like how you call it a fight scene.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think, like, all right, my first thought was they have carnivore teeth. Can't they just rip out everyone's throats? Like, what are they doing?
Just bite them.
And my second thought was Data is just giving up.
Like,
when he's quote unquote defeated, he literally just kind of like rolls back casually and like he's just had enough of this day and he's regretting booting up that morning. First, LeVar was being a jerk about the finger trap, and now this bullcrap, which could be highly prejudiced in his eyes. And he's just like, I've had it.
Yeah,
he just rolls away gently.
Yeah. And like one of them is Worf, one of them is Data, supposed to be like the strength of 10 people.
Yeah.
And then you got these three smaller hobbit sized Ferengi and they seem to be winning. It's a little ridiculous.
Well, Data does say they're stronger than they appear.
That's true.
But then he also just like, I think he just gives up. I really think Data just phones it in. He's just like, oh, everyone else is failing. I'll do the human thing.
He was just saying that to like make everyone feel better.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So we do get Tasha to the rescue, right? So she's got her phaser out and she's like, hold on, don't move or whatever. And the Ferengi are kind of like immediately disgusted by the fact that Tasha is like there as a woman and that the Starfleet people work with their women and actually force them to wear clothing as well.
Yeah. And to that I say, at least Yar's not wearing what possibly is real fur, you murderers.
Wow, you're really going back and forth on these guys.
And then also, Yar for the win, because she's had enough of these goddamn laser snakes on this goddamn planet. Okay, so now we're back up on the ship.
Yeah.
And Crusher does not fundamentally understand hypothermia.
Again, coming out hard against Dr. Crusher.
She's the worst doctor I've ever seen in a sci-fi series. And I'm including, like, Zoidberg from Futurama. Yeah, so again, no layering. These people have never heard of layering.
Yeah, they're not. Well, she's got a layer on. She's got her jacket on.
She's got her, like, medical jacket, which she probably stole from someone. Oh, again, she went to the Sackler University for Sackler studies on the Sackler Scholarship.
So, yeah, so they're not doing super great up here where the hypothermia is setting in.
Oh, yeah, and it gets weird. Everyone's like, apparently dying, right? The oxygen's running out and it's going to be terrible. Dr. Crush has like a little debate with Picard about whether or not she should be allowed to like morphine her son, basically.
Yeah.
And he's like, no. It makes them less manly.
Oh, yeah. Like face death like a man or something.
He has the right to face death like a man. Oh, and she's like, oh, I just saw him though. He's my son.
I think he says face death awake.
Yeah, I don't know. But the point is, he's like, no, only you should be manly when facing death. And I'm like, you know what, Picard? No. Don't shame me into how I want to face death. If I want to go out on a morphine high, that's what's going to happen. Maybe I don't want to asphyxiate. Maybe I don't want death to see me choking. I'd rather be like, you know.
But also, I think morphine might lower your core body temperature slightly. I know.
Cool, you die faster.
Anesthetics do that. Yeah, so it's like, that's not great.
Well, I mean, none of it's great, Dave. They haven't broken out the ponchos.
But if it's a race against time, maybe buy yourself more time by not cooling down, you know?
Well, the thing is, though, they're like all spaced out, and it's like you've left your son alone in a stateroom to die alone.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't just pile everyone in one or two big rooms like the cargo bay.
It seems like they were doing that, but Crush just like, yeah, not my son. Yeah. You know, oh, I love him so much. He's my son. I'm going to leave him in the stateroom so I can hang out with my love Kush.
So after this brief foray back into the ship to see how Crush was progressing, we go back down to the surface where Tasha tries to like laser the Ferengi or phaser the Ferengi as they're like getting ready to attack. But her phaser beam is absorbed by this like giant crystal, like the big French fries, right?
Yeah.
And the Ferengi go to laser them, but that's also absorbed by the giant French fries.
And they're replaced with pool noodles.
Yeah. So Geordi at this point weighs in, seeing like he's finally seeing things for the first time using his visor, that this whole planet is like one giant power accumulator. Like all the power is getting absorbed in these crystals. Probably the same thing with the ship. All their power is being absorbed into the planet. And just at this moment, we get a bodiless holographic head.
Yeah,
just kind Zordon. Of into appearance. A Zordon? Yes. Zordon. I forgot about Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, cool. The racist guy from Power Rangers is here.
Well, I guess this would have been the precursor. Like, this is pre Zordon.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, so Zordon has like an evil, like some sort of evil like turn.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm racist now because of the Ferengi.
So the Zordon head is demanding someone just appear from this group and meet their challenge. Mm-hmm. And the Zordon head names itself Portal 63, a guardian from the Tikkun Empire, that empire that was like hundreds of thousands of years old on this planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Quick question. Is that the same actor as it was for Groppler Zorn? Because if not, they have the same mom.
Oh, that is a good question.
They look very similar.
They do look very similar. I don't know.
Groppler? Is that you? Is the weather Groppler back?
but they have very similar hair and like, yeah, kind of bearing and
the,
stuff.
Yeah, they've got the whole like, except this time it's more of like a wizard than a Macbeth witch.
Yeah. So Data tries to convince this portal guardian that hundreds of thousands of years have passed since the Takan Empire was around, but the portal doesn't buy it. He's like, no, that can't possibly be true. You guys are lying to me or something. And the Ferengi kind of pile onto this, trying to convince the guardian that humans are very deceptive, right? They're lying to you right now, but Ferengi are honest, faithful dealing characters, right? And the Ferengi are saying the humans have come to loot the Takan Empire, but the Ferengi have stopped them, right? They're here to save your empire for you. Yeah. And so Zordon's kind of like, or Zordon, jeez. You got me. The portal garden's kind of watching all this as the Ferengi are like kind of capering about, trying to like antagonize the humans and paint them in a bad
And they
light.
Are literally like capering about.
Oh, drinking
they get, like,
game!
Super, oh my god. Yeah. We have like a good like 2 minutes to catch up on a drinking straight. It is They're just, straight up goleming all over the place.
The motions of these actors, like who decided this is how we're going
to
do it?
And they're so inconsistent. Other times they're talking like, oh, to each other. And then other times they're like, you know, jazz hands all over the place.
It's like jazz hands and jazz shoulders, like all this shimmying. Yeah. It's so ridiculous.
It's a bit strange. Yeah. And also, I just wanted to say, this entire time, they're having a serious conversation, and I could not get over Worf's messed up hair.
Yeah, he's got like a lick out of place.
His entire wig is like just askew. And now his hair matches the Space Karen attitude he had earlier.
Oh, nice.
And yeah. I was like, nice.
I think it's really funny, though. Like, we talked about this in the first episode or second episode, whatever. There's some mention of the Ferengi. And then here they're encountering the Ferengi. So it seems like they're trying to build these up as a persistent class of, like,
Antagonists,
yeah. So if you're the actors doing this, why the hell would you come out of the gate like this?
Yeah, this you is not threatening. They got, like, carnivore teeth. At first I was like, oh, yeah, dark. All right, I can see it. Like,
yeah.
You know, small carnivore teeth things. They're like, I'm going to rip your throat out.
Yeah.
But just the way, they're a pack of golems.
But then you got to keep this up for the next couple seasons? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think one of my favorite moments from this is I think it's around minute 37, 56, mm-hmm. when one of the Ferengi is like, you did this,
yes.
And he points like two hands over his head at the human. It's just, yeah. It's so ridiculous.
And they're just like galloping around in the background.
Yeah.
One thing I will say for the Ferengi, they know how to pull focus. Because I honestly had to rewatch the last 10 minutes of this 7 times. Because I just kept watching them. Yeah, you! Yeah, and it's just, they're really erratic with their movement. And you're like, what decision is this actor going to make for this minute of film?
I would have loved to have seen like the directing going on. Like, no, give me more. Give me more.
Give me more. Yeah. I want like... Have you read Lord of the Rings? More Gollum.
Yeah.
Give me more Gollum.
I wonder, actually, if they watch this as inspiration for Gollum.
I could totally see that, actually.
So the Ferengi keep tossing around all these allegations that the Federation are withholding vital defense technology, that they steal, that they use gold inappropriately, that they force their women to wear clothing. And Riker leans in and says, yes, we've done all this stuff, and worse, we're barbarians, we're horrible. And so ultimately, the Portal Guardian... kind of requests Riker to answer this challenge. And then the Portal Guardian charges at Riker, like swinging his spear around in this fancy kind of flourishes and like comes down with the spear, like literally inches from Riker's head.
Okay. Right? Can we talk about something else real quick though?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I love that Yar is like, ugh, again, another day. What is with these foreign civilizations getting horny for me? Like, can I have one day where I'm treated like Riker, where I get a modicum of respect? Because seriously, she's like Data. They're just like, we're over this.
Ugh. Just always objectified.
Always objectified. But Riker is just like, oh, he's the man. And it's like, okay, really? And then also Worf tries to go and attack the portal dude. Before the portal dude swings on Riker, he says, no, but don't come to me. Yeah. And it's like, okay, Worf, who just had his ass handed to him by some Ferengi like 2 minutes ago.
Yeah. And now you want to challenge Zorgon. Yeah.
Yeah. Zorgon.
Zorgon. So the Guardian dude like swings his spear around, does these flourishes and charges at Riker and winds up landing the spear like inches from his head. But Riker doesn't flinch because he's got a manly chin and he's not scared of anything.
He doesn't flinch.
And then Riker quotes that fear is the true enemy, the only enemy. And so at this point, I'm a little unclear exactly this whole conversation.
Yeah.
It seems like we're getting the vibe that, like, the portal guardian can read minds, mm-hmm. or certainly can understand the conversations that they were having on the bridge when, yeah. from in orbit. But he also seemed to be understanding what Riker's thoughts are. And it, I don't know, did you understand what the hell was going on here?
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me he was Betazoid or something.
Oh, no. Okay.
Dang it.
No, okay. We never come back to this.
Well, maybe he was just like, oh, a man with such a manly chin could never lie. He's yes. too honest. He's so humble and tall.
Yeah.
And has fantastic follicles. I trust him.
He doesn't need to know physics.
He can get by on sheer charisma.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then the Guardian and Riker are like having a nice little conversation.
They
about,
just like pile down.
Pile down about Sun Tzu and like philosophy and stuff.
Which,
and
again, I had to rewind so many times because the French
yes.
actors are just literally jumping off things yeah. in the background like, wee!
I love they do know how to draw focus. Yeah. They're literally just bounding around. So, as you probably know, like, the Guardian releases the Enterprise yeah. and the Ferengi vessel, so that's all good.
You know, all the life support systems are being restored to the Enterprise, yeah. which, thank God, because apparently they only rely on one kind of fuel. And Crusher's just like, ooh, Jean-Luc, and, like, yeah. is a little flirty with yeah. Picard. And I'm like, Dr. Crusher, you are already ashamed to, like, medicine and medical folk everywhere. Are you really doing this whole flirt with the boss so I don't get fired thing too? Like, stop.
Yeah.
Ugh. And also, Picard, wake up. You can find a better doctor.
I just like how everyone's kind of like dying in their post.
Right? And also with no layers, Dave. Yet again, yeah. no layers. And we find out that Crusher decided her death pose would be right next to Picard, yeah. and her son would just be left alone. And I'm like, so his mother feels the same way as I do. Interesting.
So everyone on the Enterprise is waking back up, and it's all good. And we go back to... So down on the planet, Riker is talking to Portal Guardian 63, and the Portal Guardian's deciding what to do for the Ferengi, if he should destroy them or not. In the meantime, the Ferengi are just dancing around, back and forth around Riker, just moving their arms and, like, jiggly-biggly. And the Guardian decides not to kill them, basically, on the advice of Riker. Like, Riker says, like, they can learn. They're not dissimilar from us a couple hundred years ago. They'll get better.
Which also feels a little, like, suspect. I'm just going to say there's a lot of prejudice in this episode.
Yeah.
Like, I love how this 600,000, possibly older, guard's like, handsome chin, what should we do yeah. with your opponents that you were tailgating? Yeah. And he's like, oh, they were like us a little while ago. And
before
like,
they had chins.
Are you freaking kidding me? Like
before they were tall with chins.
With handsome chins and excellent hair that stays in place when I fight. Take note, Worf.
Yeah. So they decide to spare the Ferengi, and the Guardian goes back to sleep. And then our final
Ferengi's
scene.
Still just pull it focus.
Oh, yeah. Those Ferengi.
They know how to
dancing.
Find a camera, Dave. They find their lens.
I love how they're just climbing up on the scenery just to, like, get in frame.
Do you think there's a cut where they have them literally climbing Riker?
Yeah.
And, like, they're talking, like, what should we do with these Ferengi? And they're climbing all over the portal dude and Riker. And they're like, oh, they're harmless.
Yeah, they're kind of like little gremlins, just like climbing all over the place.
I would say hobgoblins,
but... Excuse me. Yeah. So the Portal Guardian goes back to sleep until he's needed again. And we go back onto the bridge, onto the ship for the final scene, where everyone's about to leave.
Yeah, and at this point, I'm like, you know what, Riker? This portal dude just saved your ass. Maybe you should beam down a copy of The Art of War as a thank you gift. Because this guy seemed very interested in it.
You're always so classy with the gifts.
I don't know, babes, because I've said a lot of hurtful things about Dr. Crusher.
But, I mean, I guess he did download all the Enterprise's schematics and database and stuff.
Probably did so find the... Okay. Because, yeah, you know, Physics 101 wasn't a required book at Starfleet, so... But definitely the Art of War. Okay.
So in our final scene back on the bridge, we've got all the kind of crew, like, doing their conclusions and stuff. And Data and Geordi are sitting at their ops and cons positions, again, playing with Chinese finger puzzles. Like, for some reason, everyone has these Chinese finger puzzles. And, like, Picard orders them to warp away, but they can't because Geordi is stuck with the finger puzzle. And I really enjoyed that scene with the finger puzzle with Data in the conference room. I don't really understand why they have to have them here. it kind of didn't really make any sense. It just seemed like a silly joke. I don't know.
I thought it was very, like, I just got really angry irrationally because I'm like, so LeVar didn't know his way out. He was being a dick to Data, but he doesn't know his way out of a Chinese finger trap. Like, how dare you, LeVar? And I doubled down on my angst of that mocking Data moment.
Yeah.
And then also, just to be clear, the Enterprise has boxes of Chinese finger traps,
right?
But no oxygen scrubbers or a gasoline powered generator
or better blankets
or spare oxygen tanks or, you know, winter weather wear. Mm-hmm. Like, who does their inventory and has that person been fired?
You know, actually thinking about the generator thing, I would think you would need a huge amount of fuel just to power a ship at that level for any period of time. So it's just not, I think it's just not practical.
Okay, how about like a little bit of coal? Or again, just some basic chemical reactions that you learn in chemistry in high school.
Or like, yeah, if they had a backup nuclear power or something like that. But maybe the planet could steal that energy too somehow, I don't know.
I don't think they could steal the power of like the mitten warmers.
No, for sure you can have chemical mitten warmers.
Yes.
And blankets. But
Yeah, I mean, I would think that would be more useful, even just like a box of blankets over a box of Chinese finger traps.
Yeah, not for sure.
Follow-up thought. Mm-hmm. What if the Ferengis can't figure out how to get out of the finger traps and they all starve? Is there a Starfleet defense for that? And is that considered a war crime?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah, because they do decide, yeah, let's beam over a box.
Yeah, and they're like, we're being pranksy. But I'm like, no, really? What if they think they're going to get injured if they pull themselves out of it? And they're like, oh, and so they die from starvation or something.
I guess you just call that evolution.
That's murder, Dave. Like, I just feel like the entire just episode is just like, oh, these backwards Ferengis, when really the humans are really horrible.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I should say Starfleet. Yes, be inclusive.
And again, with so much of the first season stuff, it's just, it can be hard to watch because these characters aren't who they become later. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not. It's almost to the point of it's not canon. You know, it's that different. But yeah. What about you?
Well, first off, I wanted to know if you think I can pull off saying woo-wee in everyday conversation.
Only when you're like driving. If it's like you're stuck in the snow and you got to reverse and then go forward, just like woo-wee.
All right. Sounds good.
You can do it. Yeah.
And then secondarily.
Yeah.
So just a casual thought for future episodes. Dr. Crusher mentioned sedating Wesley earlier in the episode. Can that be the standard for future episodes? It was nice not to have to deal with him.
Yeah, I think you could get a petition going for that.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think a lot of people would be on board with anesthetizing Wesley.
Just put him in an induced coma
for
a bit. You're like, oh no, the ship's power never turned on. So this is what we have to do.
If I remember, I was just looking ahead a little bit for our next episode. And I want to say the next episode is like him doing his... Oh, the next one is like a Wes heavy episode.
Oh, gosh. I missed the Ferengi already.
Yeah.
At least they danced around and were lively and like, God, the cameras love them.
Our next one's called Where No One Has Gone Before, which fans of the show, if you know The Traveler, people listening, this is the first episode of The Traveler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Also, I would like to point out that you promised me at the end of episode 2, which I guess was technically episode 1 because it's the two-parter,
right?
That Q would return for Space Hamlet. The hell is Space Hamlet? I need him to liven
only, like,
things up for
three
me.
Episodes ago.
I just want him back so bad. Started out strong, now we're here.
I think he appears at least one more time in season 1.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly more than that, but certainly one more at least.
Psyched. Can't wait.
Yeah. And there are some really good Q episodes coming up.
Good.
Yeah, that's really
fun. I mean, every episode of the Q is good, as far as I'm concerned.
But yeah, the next one, like I said, Wes heavy. So get ready. Think about the drinking game in advance. And
Would you get alcohol poisoning if it was like every time Wesley annoys you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just that family. Like, kick them out.
All right. Well, I think that's it for us for this week. We hope you all enjoyed listening to our comments on The Last Outpost.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back in a couple of days with a new episode for the next TNG, episode 6. And if you enjoy this, we encourage you to check out our other podcast, Anecdotes for Awkward Folks.
Yeah.
Anecdotes for Awkward Folks. Cool. All right. That's it from us. We hope you all had a good time and you'll listen to us later.
Hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
I don't know what Ferengi is for live long and prosper.
Ooh. I don't think they have anything.
Is it just like. Okay. May you find many gold.
Nice.
That sounds bad.
Read your rules of acquisition.
Read the art of war.
Okay. Yeah. That's what you can do.
There you go, guys.
Or the rules of acquisition.
Or the rules of acquisition.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks,
sounds
everyone.
Good.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.